Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartby Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
So back after a week off, just on vacation.
What a week to take off, right?
Anything happen on the charts last week?
Only the biggest week, one may argue, in Billboard history.
Well, I was looking at links online of what happened, but very few. I was looking more at a lynx, an actual cat, a lynx up in the mountains of Canada. They're pretty rare to see a lynx. It's a better kind of lynx.
Did you think about this while you were away? Did this just come to you? Like, how long have we been sitting on this lynx thing?
Not the whole time.
But more than today. Wow.
But yeah, it was running across the road in broad daylight, and apparently it's really rare to see that. Just darted into the woods on one side, it's between Banff and Jasper National Park up in Alberta, Canada. And they look really cute. They're really cute looking cats, but I'm sure if you tried to cuddle up with one, it would probably claw your face off because they're not house cats, but really, really cute. Amazing scenery up there. Mountains are just absolutely huge, majestic. It's the Canadian Rockies. My brother and I did a camping trip. We did a little backcountry camping. Survived, no bear attacks or anything, but you're deep in bear country, and if anything happens, you're kind of on your own. We were at a very small campsite, hiked out about 3 miles to it, or 5.4 kilometers, because everything is both English and French and miles, kilometers out there. But we really had a lot of fun out there. Everything's so English and French, and after a while, you really start to pick up French so much, and I studied French in high school, but at the airport, people say hello and bonjour when they take your boarding passes. At the end, someone said hello, bonjour. I just said bonjour. I think I'd been in Canada so long, I started speaking French myself. So do you pick up an English accent, Trevor, when you're in England? I know you go a lot. I haven't heard it, but maybe when you're over there.
Yeah, I feel like this is like this, I guess kind of in that same way. Like once you're around the accent enough, you sort of subconsciously must pick it up, because there's certain words that I definitely hear myself saying differently, and even names I think are probably the most important, like the way I hear a name in an accent for the first time, even if like it has, you know, it can be like a sort of a common name, it could be like a name like I don't know, like Luke or something, like Luke Perry or Luke Combs or whatever, and like, but all the British friends, like, they call him like Luke. So like when I say like Luke, I have to like say like his name like that. Like, it's very weird. Yeah. Like, even though I would never say like Luke Combs. I would say like Luke Combs, but I can't say Luke to him because it's like, I don't know. It's very weird. It's very weird. So I guess stuff like that, maybe. Yeah.
So this week we'll recap, as always, the Billboard Hot 100. We're now into record extending territory with Lil Nas X. Also a song new to the top 10 this week on the Hot 100. And yeah, we'll cover a couple notable moves on other charts as well. And really excited to welcome special musical guests Lady Antebellum this week. They recently chatted with Billboard senior chart manager Jim Asker in Nashville, along with BMLG CEO Jimmy Harnon. So Jim, and the trio of Lady Antebellum, Charles Kelly, Hillary Scott, and Dave Haywood all coming up talking about Lady Antebellum's upcoming album later this year, a lot more. And they're going to perform exclusively here on the podcast as well. New single, What If I Never Get Over You, that's coming up. So really excited about all that on the way here on this week's Billboard Chartbeat podcast. As always, let's start with this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
I got red, I got blue, what you want? The Chanel, the Balenciaga, Louis Vuitton. She know I got the Fendi Prada when I am alone. I needed me a Diorada, I need me the one. I started from the bottom, you can see the west.
Number 9.
I'm a sucker for all the subliminal things. No one knows about you. Sucker for you.
Yeah. Number 8.
I want you out of my head. I want you out of my bedroom tonight. There's no way I can save you. Cause I need to be saved too. I'm no good at goodbyes. We're both acting insane.
Number 7.
Cause I don't care when I'm with my baby. Yeah. All the bad things disappear. Making me feel that maybe I am somebody. I can deal with the bad nights when I'm with my baby, yeah.
Number 6.
Ain't never got you knowing being modest. Popping, shipping only cause you know you popping, yeah. You got it, girl, you got it. Hey. You got it, girl, you got it.
Number 5.
Can we just talk? Can we just talk about before we get lost? Let me out the phones. Can't get what we want without one. I've never felt like this before.
Number 4.
Fresh photos with the bomb lighting. New man on the Minnesota Vikings. True hearts needed something more exciting. Bum bum be dum be dum bum be. You tried to break my
Number 3.
I love it when you call me senorita. I wish I could pretend that
Number 2.
I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy. Duh.
And number 1.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back.
Better believe it. There it is. One more time. That is 18 indeed. Mighty Weeks at number 1 for Old Town Road. That is Lil Nas X, of course, featuring his friend Billy Ray Cyrus. Record extending, like Gary said. Well, I mean, really, at this point, all you're competing with is yourself. It's a lot of people, you know, wondering what's going on with the song at this juncture. Don't forget, as we keep track of all the remixes and redos that came out this week, actually the first week with the RM remix, counting for all 7 days for the Hot 100, it came out a little bit right before the close of the chart week last week. So it had a little help for week 17, but really week 18 is where it comes through. So, you know, not the biggest. I mean, this isn't a Billy Ray Cyrus level remix, as I'm sure everybody, you know, is kind of aware in the cultural sphere, but I mean, really, as all versions combined together, continues to help. So it's 14th week at number 1 on the digital song sales chart. It's actually the second best run at number 1 by any song. Despacito, number 1 with 17 weeks, so within 3 weeks there.
And you mentioned RM being on the remix, and he's not officially credited because the new version wasn't overwhelmingly contributing to its overall total, but a member of BTS is on the number 1 song this week on the Hot 100. Another milestone for BTS.
Yeah. There's, you know, of course, it's sort of an asterisk there, but yeah, definitely helping out the cause there. But yeah, 18 weeks number 1 as well on the streaming songs chart. So obviously, we know how massive streams have been for this song. This week in particular, streams still, even though they're about half of its peak when it had 143, they're still dominating with 67 million streams this week. Billie Eilish is number 2 this week in terms of streams with Bad Guy, which has just under 46 million. So still, I mean, a 20 million streaming gap for this song. And, you know, so I mean, when you just look at it that way, just in terms of the space that it has to fall, I mean, Old Town Road creeping, of course, ever closer to the 21 week mark. Who knows at this point?
And the difference in overall points between Old Town Road and Billie Eilish Bad Guy, it's certainly much closer. It's an actual race this week. It's not just an entire runaway, but still a bit of a comfortable lead. And at this point, both songs are starting to lose overall metrics kind of equally. So not sure if Bad Guy can pick up enough to overtake Old Town Road and get to number one. Again, we'll see if that can. We'll see if Senorita in the top 10 is moving forward. Maybe that has a chance. Maybe Lizzo, Truth Hurts. Maybe something brand new. The new Ariana Grande and Social House Boyfriend just came out. So should have somewhat of a big debut next week. We'll see exactly how high. But yeah, at the moment, it's still Old Town Road, and a 19th week at number one. Certainly still possible next week. Might have to be saying all this again next week, Trevor. Find another way to intro at a number one.
just copy paste. Just put 19 instead. Well, obviously this year we saw the number one record get broken. Maybe if this is any consolation, maybe the number two record is starting to be in play as well. Billie Eilish Bad Guy, 8 weeks at number two this week. The record for songs that spent the most weeks at number two without going to number one is 10 weeks. We saw Waiting for a Girl Like You in the 1980s by Foreigner and Missy Elliott's Work It at the top of the 2000s. Both those songs, 10 weeks at number two. So Bad Guy joining pretty close into that territory. The last song actually to spend 8 weeks or more at number two without getting to number one was Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud, which was trapped behind Uptown Funk for the longest time. So, yeah, I know on its face that sounds like a terrible consolation prize to have the number two record. Yeah. But, I mean, I guess it really goes to show both in different ways how massive Old Town Road is, you know, that it can just block all these songs from number one for so long. But I think, you know, when we look back, you know, a lot of people will look back, of course, at Bad Guy maybe not being a number one hit, but that shouldn't understate how massive a song it is as well. I mean, you know, this would have been an 8-9 week number one had one particular song not been out in time. So, you know, obviously it might be for Billie fans or maybe Billie herself, you know, sort of, you know, unfortunate in the moment, but let's not lose sight of what an 8 week number two hit, like just how massive and popular a track that has to be to achieve that.
Also actual number one news for Billie Eilish on the alternative airplay chart. Song goes to number one, Bad Guy, and it's her second number one. Just a few months ago, she was number one on that chart with Bury a Friend. So how rare is it for a female artist to have two number ones, at least, on the alternative songs chart, which started in the late 80s. She's only the third woman ever to have at least two number ones on that chart. So back in 1990, Sinead O'Connor became the first, Nothing Compares to You, and then Emperor's New Clothes, great follow-up that maybe people don't always remember, but showed more what her core sound was back in that era, a little more up-tempo, a little more rock. So Sinead O'Connor was the first, and then Alanis Morissette with three in the 90s, all from Jagged Little Pill. So all before Billie Eilish was born back in the early to mid-90s, but now she's in, really exclusive, impressive company. Sinead, Alanis, and Billie Eilish, the only solo women with multiple number ones on the alternative airplay chart.
And though there has not been turnover at the number one spot in a long time, we do have a new top 10 that joins the crew this week. We're talking Lil Tecca, and the song is called Ransom. That jumps up from all the way from number 19 last week up to the top 10. So it kind of, you know, drives by the top 20 spots. Really the latest breakout from the SoundCloud era that kind of just bubbled its way up naturally. Tecca got signed by a joint deal with Galactic and Republic recently, and the song really just blowing up. Obviously, hugely popular on streaming services. The song up to number four on the streaming chart this week. Kid's only 16 years old, Gary. Can you imagine having a top 10 hit back in the day when you were 16? That would have been in like, what, 19?
I'm afraid what you're going to guess.
I probably would have been. That's like 19. It's like 1990 for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won a science fair at 1990.
Okay, dope.
Not sure.
On your way, yeah.
Not sure Lil Tecca ever has done that at this age.
Don't know if we got to ask. Don't know if Lil Tecca's ever won the science fair. But, I mean, really, I think for some people, if they thought that this sort of SoundCloud rap emerging breakout trend, he doesn't necessarily have the same, it's not the same moody, you know, sort of contemplative style that most people probably associate with sort of SoundCloud rap. But I mean, definitely using the platform to break out in a big way. And I mean, here we are, top 10. He's also, if you saw the video, linked up with Cole Bennett, who's been a music video director for a lot of the kids who have come through in the same way. YBN Cordae, we're talking Juice WRLD and the Lucid Dreams video in particular, Blueface. So definitely a go-to pairing that's helped him. And yeah, just 16 on his way, and debut album should be coming out later this year. So we'll see what else he's got to offer.
Are we past the core of that darker SoundCloud rap?
I guess we're probably it's probably in another transformation, I guess, if you want to say. I mean, there's a lot of kids like I know Cordae's album got a lot of positive reception, that it's returning a little more to what you'd expect, I guess, if you just put on a rap album. There's still plenty of, you know, melody out there, and there's still a lot of sort of sparseness, but I think if you, the way it sort of seemed to saturate late 2017 into 2018, that seems to be easing up a bit. You know, it's hard to say while we're going through something if we're really on the other side of it, or if this is just sort of a dry spell and, you know, the next wave of kids is right out there ready to go. But right now, it definitely seems like maybe it's just a summertime thing too, the more quote unquote traditional kind of rap is back for a lot of the new ones.
Other milestones on charts. Lauren Daigle, You Say, number one on the Adult Contemporary chart. Big deal, obviously, for Lauren. It's the first song ever to be number one on both Adult Contemporary and it topped Christian Airplay. So first crossover hit ever to be number one on those two charts. And knocks out Girls Like You by Maroon 5 after a record 33-week run at number one.
At the end of the year, we're going to just recap all the records that were tied or broken this year, because it feels like 2019 is a record-setting year in itself.
Yeah, and one other record-extending song this week for Luke Combs. Actually, two feats for him this week. Goes to number one on country airplay with his latest single, Beer Never Broke My Heart. It's his sixth career-opening single to go to number one on country airplay. No one's ever done that before, so he's 6 for 6 out of the gate with his first six singles going to number one. And if that's not enough, his debut LP, This One's For You, number one on top country albums for a 44th week, passes Randy Travis's Always and Forever from the late 80s. It's the longest-running number one ever for a male on top country albums, and looks like it's got a good chance to have the all-time record at this point, 50 weeks, beginning in 1997 for Shania Twain's Come On Over. So add that to the end of year stats. All right, staying in country, that's where we're going for the rest of the podcast. So excited to have Lady Antebellum joining us. What a history on Billboard's charts. 9 number ones on country airplay so far. 5 number one albums on top country albums, a pair of top tens on the Hot 100, Need You Now, number two in 2010, just one of the absolute biggest hits. And we do our decade end flashback. We'll see how big that comes up at the end of this year, at the end of the 2010s. Also, Just a Kiss. Remember that a year later. Great song, too. Number 7 on the Hot 100. Maybe a little bit in the shadow of Need You Now, but great, great follow up. Big, both huge hits. New album on the way for Lady Antebellum coming up later this year. Current single, What If I Never Get Over You, is in the country airplay top 25 this week. We're going to hear an exclusive live, taped, but performed live version on the podcast coming up, along with Jimmy Harnon, BMLG CEO, all the members of Lady Antebellum, Charles Kelly, Hillary Scott, and Dave Haywood, talking with Billboard senior chart manager Jim Asker, recently in Nashville, here on the Billboard Choppy Podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's supposed to hurt. It's a broken heart. To moving home is the hardest part.
Oh, hello, everybody. This is Jim Asker on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast. And with me today, I'm going to be chatting with the group Lady Antebellum. And I've been waiting for a long time to talk to you guys. I've talked to Hillary before. Charles, hello. Charles Kelly, everyone. Yeah. Hillary Scott.
Hi.
And Dave Haywood. Hello, Dave.
How are you?
And the president of BMLG Records. And what is your fancy title under?
Yeah. It's just president CEO of the label.
CEO. Don't leave out CEO. Yeah.
A lot of letters now.
That's right. You are CEO now, aren't you?
I am.
Well, congratulations
yes.
on that.
And thank
congratulations
you,
with the new singles. Fantastic.
Thank you.
It's a duet. And I want this conversation to be like everybody just chime in whenever. Okay. So I'd like to talk about a little bit. About the new single, first of all, because it's doing really well on the charts. I do the charts of Billboard, by the way. So it's number 23 on our hybrid chart, Hot Country Songs. Had 4.3 million streams last week.
Awesome.
On our total streaming chart. Mm-hmm. So how's it feel to be back with a duet?
Fun.
Can I call it a duet?
Yeah, for sure it's a duet. Yeah, it's straight up duet.
It feels like a little bit of like returning home back to the songs and the sound that we really started doing as a band. Mm-hmm. Even though it's a brand new song and with fresh production and working with a new producer, Dan Huff, we love songs that feel really relatable, that we can bring a male and female perspective, two perspectives of a love story gone wrong in this, you know, in this case, to a song. And so we feel like that's what we bring as a band. And this song, it just feels really, really comfortable for us.
I love the video. I love that you shot it in front of a just modest Nashville ranch house.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just love that.
It was very similar to the house I grew up in, that house.
Where was it?
That was East Nashville,
yeah,
wasn't it?
East Nashville, yeah.
Can I get each of your take on that, on the song? And
well, I mean, for me, this is Charles, you know.
Oh, thank you for doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a first.
Yeah, well, people might not realize,
Hopefully they know I'm not you.
Yeah, exactly. you know, I feel like it just, the sound of it is very authentically us. I mean, I was even playing the whole record. We just finished it. Still needs to get mixed and have a few little punches here and there. But overall, I was playing the whole record for my dad. We were on this little beach trip, and he drove me the hour drive to the airport, and I played it for him, and he leaned over and he goes, Charles, this sounds just like, you know, what everybody kind of fell in love with y'all for off those first couple records, and especially that single. It just has that feel, you know, and I feel like Dan Huff was able to marry what, you know, a little bit of the sound that we had helped create with Paul Wehrli, but then give a little bit of a fresh perspective. He's such a talented guy, but more than that, I think it's just the material as a whole and that song. You know, there was a lot of months and months and months of whittling these songs down, and I'll give it to Jimmy Harnon. You know, I mean, he is such a hands-on collaborative, you know, partner. And you know, the whole label in general is. And
I don't know how many songs are on the album, but how many do you go through?
Oh my gosh! No telling what we go through.
And did you write a bunch for this as well?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we wrote
because you're all great writers.
Thank you. But to get back to this single specifically, I mean, I think it has all those things. You know, I mean, and again, we got to give it to Dan Huff. He just brought such a coolness. I mean, even the way it starts with the you know, with kind of little synth sounds gives a little bit of a, you know, a modern but yet warm feel overall. So I'm really proud of it.
Cool. Yeah, stop me if I'm wrong here, but towards the end, there were so many songs coming in mm-hmm. that I kind of started to lose track.
Yes.
And it was at the end of the year, and we went to our company retreat at Jonathan Newman's beautiful home. Mm-hmm. And
Laura Vils, that for anybody not?
They're just folks who are friends of Scott's in town. And we
Scott Borchetta.
Yeah, and we did our retreat there. We had a publishing night there. And mm-hmm. Laura Vils is one of the songwriters. And that's the time of the year when you finally calm down, you stop looking at the charts, you just kind of chill out. So my whole crew and I were sitting at the table and we, you know, drinking wine and just chit-chatting, and she played the song. And I went, what is this? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, we have it. I said, oh my God, really? And it was at that moment, like sometimes you hear a song and if it's in the midst of a lot of songs, it can kind of go by you. Like when you guys go to publishing meetings, it's like an ensemble, like a waterfall of songs. And by the third or fourth song.
You probably had a lot of, having worked with these guys at Capitol, their former home, Capitol Records, you were there, Jimmy.
I was.
You must have had a lot of anticipation for this single.
Absolutely, and we're thrilled to have them. When we found out that they were in a place where we could talk to them, we couldn't have been more thrilled to approach them. And it's kind of a reunion, as Hillary has just said, and we're just really excited about it.
Cool. And I want to get into that, how you guys all got together, but I want to get Dave's take on the single.
Well, you know, I was just thinking while y'all were talking to echo that, I mean, it kind of feels like the early days again, which has been a lot of fun. You know, when we started out in 2006, Charles and I moved to Nashville. Met Hillary in a bar and started writing songs together.
That's a true story.
That's a true story. Yeah, it really is.
Can you tell any for the fans?
I mean, there's a lot to it. I mean, the kind of abridged version is Charles and I grew up together in Augusta, Georgia, and we were writing songs together at the University of Georgia our last year there. And Charles came up to Nashville first, and he was like, man, you got to come up here. This place is full of creative people, creative minds. So I moved up, and we started writing songs, really just wanting to be songwriters, pitch songs to other artists. I mean, we were like, man, what if Garth Brooks could sing our song, as if it's that easy, and trying to pitch songs out. And then we met Hillary at Exit Inn. No, 12th and Porter, excuse me, a little bar in Nashville.
Right.
And Charles talked to her that day and said, why don't you come over to the house? Dave's over, you know, we're crashing at my brother's house, and we could all write songs. And to even tie to the single now, when she walked in the first day, we were working on a song, and she kind of had the idea to turn it into a duet. And that was day one of Lady Antebellum.
Cool.
Before we had a band name or anything. And so this song to me feels like a return back to some of that feel. I mean, to be able to tell both sides of a breakup, you know, is something we've always done.
Songs. I don't know why. We really do.
Yeah.
Like love songs. We got some love songs, but we haven't really put out many. I mean, other than just a kiss, you know, there's a lot of, we like to pull at the heartstrings
like
a little bit.
Most people, it's like something in human nature, like, or just gravitate towards sad songs. I know I always have. Even I think when I was younger, before I even fully understood what it meant to be in love or to fall out of love, like I've always just been drawn to those sad songs. And I think it's just a different, they just emote differently. And I think, this is just one of those that it asks you ask yourself all of those questions when you get out of a relationship and someone that you really cared about. It's like, am I ever going to have a day where I don't?
And it's a great story song that anybody can relate to, although it's a sad story.
Yeah,
you know,
we've all been there.
I love the questions in the story. I mean, you're obviously continually asking questions lyrically, which is why we fell in love so much with it as well. I mean, John Green was on it, Laura Vels,
and Ryan Hurd sang.
Ryan Hurd and Sam Ellis.
Ryan Hurd,
he sang the demo.
Yep. Who, Charles? Who was the first one that sent you the song? Was it Ryan?
No, it wasn't Ryan. Was it
Allison?
I think it might have been Allison.
Yeah. Because it's published at the
beginning. Interesting that you're all great writers and you picked the song by someone else to be your lead single.
Well, here's the thing. We write a lot. And, you know, I thought one of the coolest things I remember Luke Bryan said in an interview was like, he goes, because he writes a lot too. And he goes, you know, I feel like I'm finally at a point in my career where, you know, I've written a lot of hits that have got me to a point in the career where finally I get sent the best songs in Nashville. And, you know, and so we feel like we're getting sent some of the strongest songs that we've ever been sent in our life. And you have to just be very honest with yourself that, like, you know, if you got a song and it's up against yours and this one, it's just better. At the end of the day, you know, our goal is, you know, to just put out the best music we can. And we've gotten to the point now where, you know, we make our living on the road, you know. I mean, to me, it's not about, you know, it's about a longevity over, you know, trying to make sure we cut songs that we've written so we can make some, you know, money on publishing. It's more about trying to take your ego out of it and just put out the best songs. And this song felt like something we would have written. I mean, it reminds me of like when we, you know, we found American Honey. That was one of the first singles we ever put out that we didn't write. And it felt like us, you know? And so I don't know, this one.
As long as the outside songs continue the story and feel authentic to us, that's to your point. Like they're our own material. It's special, but it's not precious in that way. Like we want to really make an album that encompasses the story that we're telling.
I can't wait to hear the whole thing.
But there's like a song called What I'm Leaving For, you know, which is, it's about, I mean, it's our lives and we didn't write it and we heard it. And it's like made all three of us separately, you know, just kind of well up inside. It's about, you know, when I'm gone and stuff, it's like, but you know, I know what I'm leaving for. I'm doing this for you. We're all in this as a family together. You know, we leave, and it's so hard to leave our family sometimes. But when you come home and you see them and they're safe and provided for, you know, that's what we do this for.
You sound excited about this project. And where'd Jimmy go? Oh, there you are. Okay. I got worried for a second. I just got up and
left. Getting a coffee, sorry.
You must be excited about this. It's a new birth. And you performed this song for the first time in Ireland, correct?
We did. Yeah, we performed.
How did it go the first time you did it?
Amazing. We were over there for the Country to Country Festival. And it's really been fun to road test, we call it, these songs. Mm-hmm. And we played that one and then another track off the new record called Be Patient With My Love. And they both went over really well. We find over in the UK and in Australia, really outside of the US, like, they gravitate a lot towards the heavier and a lot deeper material. And this was one of those two that we just loved hearing their response and went over great.
You guys have had 9 number ones, not to mention all the top tens, all the number one albums. You've been number one on the Billboard 200, the multi-genre chart with your albums. Are you able to not put pressure on you when you're getting together with Jimmy and a new label and just have fun with it?
I feel like it's a healthy level of pressure. Like,
hopefully
in a
Jimmy
good
feels
way.
The pressure more than we do. What do you-
No, I mean, we the first song that I think we heard, Scott and I, was Be Patient With My Love. And I could still remember I was sitting at the bar having a soda at Wild Ginger, and I heard the song and I sent it to Scott, and he's, you know, Scott's very busy, gets a ton of emails and texts. And literally as soon as I sent it, he responded like in 4 minutes, and the song was probably like 3:50. And he goes, wow. And that was the minute. And then we went over to your house and started talking. And I think Scott was the first one that said, he goes, you all need to start writing songs that you feel are part of your life where you are now. You're married, you have children, be authentic to where you are in your career. And that's kind of been that's the first, you know, moniker we've been going by. And the second one we're always saying is, it's your album. So make the music you like. And if you're in a comfortable spot, you're going to be the most creative and the most free and the most, you know, the best is going to come out of you if you're not second guessing yourself.
One of my favorite exercises, we signed with Big Machine and we were over at the label talking with Jimmy and the whole team and Scott. And one of my favorite things that we went through, which I guess subconsciously had a big impact on this album, was Jimmy said, what are your top three, what are your core Lady Antebellum songs? And we said, Need You Now, I Run to You, and American Honey. Feel like to us kind of the core and the lifeblood of what Lady Antebellum is, and lyrically, musically, and sonically, and he said, "All right, now let's do that again," you know. And I think that
they were all the first two records, so
yeah. That, but that
see,
message,
it's that easy.
That message, yeah. I think, resonated with us returning on this album a little bit to some of that sound that we had on the first couple albums.
Well, then we departed too. I mean, it was an artistic, like, wanting to explore ourselves, spread our wings, try some new sounds. And as we became a live act, you know, we needed songs like Bartender. We needed more songs like You Look Good. And they have become the lifeblood of our lives.
I love You Look Good. I love the horns,
thank you so
by the
much.
Way.
Well, and so, you know, but I do think, like Dave was saying, at the end of the day, if I had, and I said, you know, somebody never heard of us, first I'd say, okay, we'll go listen to Need You Now, then Run to You, then, you know, American Honey. And then I'd probably after that, they go, and then, you know, as we started exploring and, you know, listen to Bartender. And but it is funny, like that is the core of who we are. You know, it's a little bit of that, a little more warmer tones, and that's what this record has, is full of that. And you know, we got some fun stuff on there, but it's definitely much more of a introspective record. And you know, it's not draggy. It just, I don't know. I think it's one that hopefully, you know, as the kids say, gives you the feels, you know.
Is that what your kids say?
I don't know, all the kids say now. It's like, feels. I got the feels.
That's what I say to you, Jimmy, right? I want to talk to you for a second about what is the relationship between a band, an artist, and a record label like these days? It's harder to do business today in general. How important is the album to you guys? The work of an album?
It's still big. And this is, and I will say, this is the most unique relationship. We've obviously were with Universal for the longest time, originally Capitol Records. Mm-hmm. And we did have a really strong relationship with Mike. You know, everything got so big there, though. I think we and they would both admit that our closeness started just, and as we got families and busier, the closeness just a little bit got lost in there, you know, as the business became so big. And Jimmy, I mean, there's not a day that goes by that he's not texting us, emailing us, you know, calling us, we're playing golf, or he's got an idea. And that is such a unique thing that we've never really experienced. And so, so I don't know, now back into talking about the record.
That carried over into the process,
carried over.
Though,
it was very collaborative the
whole
time.
And it felt like a family, truly, yeah. Like working with Big Machine, Jimmy, everybody there, working with Dan, you know, even down to where we cut vocals for the album. I mean, we were in Dan's house in his home studio. And so, you know, you're singing, and I know I felt way more grounded and felt like I went to a place vocally that I'd never been able to go to before, just out of being comfortable in his home.
Well, not and just like, saying this, your voices mesh so well together.
Thank you.
When you hear Lady Antebellum, it just feels like home if you're a country thank listener. You. Would you play one?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
Maybe the single?
Yeah, let's do it.
Jimmy, you could, since you've had a hit, you could sing on this.
Oh, boy. We want to keep the people listening to the podcast, not running away from the podcast.
While Dave is getting the guitar, what's the relationship with your fans like? How do you talk to them?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, obviously we talk through them. We think musically. I mean, we're trying to.
But it's such a social media world
it is.
Today.
It is.
Participate.
We do. We try not to get too caught up in it because, you know, too, there's times, I mean, when I remember all the stuff really started kind of kicking off, like Twitter and stuff, you know, there's always these bad comments. You start taking it to heart. And then after a while, you realize that you got to take a lot of that stuff with a grain of salt. And but we still have, you know, most of the same diehard fans have been with us from the beginning. We recognize them in the front rows. And
you've won so many awards and accolades and I mean, are those things still important to you?
You know, absolutely. And they all mean different things because, you know, so many of them are peer voted and that means the world because your peers are watching what you're doing and they believe in it enough to vote for it. But then you also have the fan voted awards, which those are just so unbelievable too, because there's so many other choices they could choose and they chose us. And we do feel like we have the most incredible fans who have been with us, who have grown up with us. You know, we're seeing that a lot at our residency in Vegas. Like, we get a lot of new fans and audience, you know, members in our residency there at the Palms. But then we've had a lot of people, a lot of fans that we've known for years that have come out to see the show. And that, I think, that show in particular really is such, there's such an opportunity to connect with the audience on a very, like, close level because it's 2,500 people and
is
it just feels
is it
really
going to continue that residency in Vegas by
no,
the way
no no not done? As of right now
oh well we don't know I mean, but we I mean would, yeah we
do. I was going to ask you too. You're probably going to hit the road big time after
yeah
this
yeah,
record
yeah
comes
we're
out,
gearing
right?
up for
we're
sure.
already planning for that, which is crazy.
Well, you have one more run
we have one more run at the end of August
but no, I think there could definitely be an opportunity to do it again. I mean, this was kind of our dipping our toes into that world, and I mean it's felt like it's been, you know, a huge success for us and our fans. And
it gives fans a chance to plan. And, you know, it's got to be a luxury to a lot of fans to be able to set their sights on something. Dave, so that's a beautiful guitar.
It is.
I love it.
I'm in tune enough. I don't know.
One request is that I did a podcast with for Billboard with Keith Urban, and I told him at the end, I said right at the end, I said, you're going to win the Entertainer of the Year award this year. And he won. Wow. Next, I did Tori Kelly, and I said, you're going to win Grammy this year. She wins. Lauren Daigle, same thing. So now you guys, you can't ruin my streak. So you need to win that Group of the Year at the CMAs.
Got goosebumps. That'd be amazing.
All right. I'll stop talking. Everybody, this is Lady Antebellum.
You're supposed to hurt, it's a broken heart, but to moving on is the hardest part. It comes in waves, the letting go, but the memory fades. Everybody knows, everybody knows. What if I'm trying? But then I close my eyes and then I'm right back, lost in that last goodbye. And what a time does it do what it's supposed to do? What if I never get over you?
Maybe months go by, maybe years from now, and I meet someone and it's working out. Every now and then he can see right through, 'cause when I look at him,
yeah, all I see is you. What if I'm trying, but then I close my eyes and then I'm right back, lost in that last goodbye. What if time doesn't do what it's supposed to do? What if I never get over you? Ooh, ooh, yeah. What if I never get over?
What if I never get closure?
What if I never get back all the wasted words I told you?
What if it never gets better?
What if this lasts forever and never? Close my eyes and then I'm right back, lost in that last goodbye. What a time does it do what it's supposed to do? What if I never get over you? What if I gave,
what if I gave
everything I got? What if your love was my one and only shot?
Good Lord.
Like David Letterman says, don't try this at home, kids.
That was so good.
Thank you.
You know what I love about you guys is, like, when we were talking beforehand, can they do one? Oh, yeah, sure, whatever. Whatever you want. When I interviewed Hillary before the Christian record got out, I remember telling her beforehand, I'm like, you seem like the kind of person who could just walk around town and hang out, and you all seem so down to earth. How have you maintained that quality all these years?
Gosh, I think... not only do I believe in the way we were raised, you know, just our parents all being so solid and incredible people, but then we ground each other. I think our spouses ground us. I think, you know, we feel very, very grateful to get to do this, but we're also normal people like everybody else, you know. I think being married, and I know for me as a mom, that grounds you a lot, because you get off stage and they don't care.
Kindergarten. You know? You have a kid starting kindergarten.
My daughter's starting kindergarten. So, but I think it's that. It's being surrounded by people that that love us for who we are and not what we do, you know? And I think that's really important.
That sounds like a number one song, Jimbo.
I like the way you're thinking, Jim.
You guys have
multiple always, weeks.
I'm a former radio programmer, so it just has that feel. You know, songs pop. That song pops.
Thank you.
You know, how have you maintained your relationship with radio through the years? That's an ongoing, changing world. It's so different now than when I was doing it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, it's funny. It's such a symbiotic relationship. I mean, you know, it's like we depend upon them and they depend upon us, you know, us as artists putting out music that means something and does something and pushes, you know, and you know, I don't know, you end up coming really close with them all and see them at the same shows every year and hang out with them backstage. And the wild thing too is, you know, you'll see them flip flop and move to different stations around. And I don't know. I mean, we've just always, it's still such a big part, especially of our genre. You know, that's
for
where
country,
for country listeners,
I mean, still the major platform,
and that's
country.
Where they discover new music. And so, you know, for us, I mean, it's something that we put a lot of stock in. One of the reasons too that we really decided we wanted to come over and have such a strong promo team, and because, you know, Jimmy, when he was over at Capitol, you know, several times could have lost our first single, Love Don't Live Here, and several times, more than several, almost lost Run to You, and he believed in it so much that he just let it, he just, you know, I just felt like I'd never seen the same fire.
I was on the other side of those calls with him, so I know. And I'll tell you a really quick story. Once I was getting let go from a station, they were flipping formats, and Jimmy was trying to get me to add this record before I left. And he doesn't remember.
I don't know
this,
where this is going,
but I remember. I'm like, Jimmy, I just got fired. Can you let it go? And
you're still in the building.
He didn't let it go, and I think I ended up adding the record.
He'll wear people down. But you know what, though, too?
But I
remembered it, and I told him, you know, I said, you know, what I always loved about you, I said, is I remember when we played golf together when you were at Capitol, and he never got off his phone. Now, was that a really fun golf partner? No, but it's somebody you want in your damn corner,
right?
Knowing that even when he's on the golf course,
I've run a marathon with him, and he takes calls while he.
How do you do that
while he runs?
Well, we were just training, so but
it's a 20-mile run.
I was younger then.
I remember you used to like bike to work in the morning. Yeah,
I did. Yeah.
Now it's golf and rosé and cigars.
Settling into elderly life leisurely. Now.
I just realized there was nobody chasing me, so why should I keep running?
When you guys have all taken hiatuses from each other, what is that? How awesome of it! Just you get chills when you listen to you sing in a room. What's that like when you get back together, the three of you all play together?
It was really special getting back in and rehearsing. I remember. Well, and a lot of that happened just so naturally. I mean, like Hillary, of course, at one point, you know, when she's pregnant, it was like, okay, well, she's taking a little, obviously going to take some time off, and then I started working on some music, and then she, you know, had this this real strong desire to do a record with her family, you know, in the Christian genre. And
it's
was
a great
like,
record.
Yeah. And it was like, this is perfect time for us to explore different things. And Dave was producing. We were writing a ton. And
we were 9 years in at that point, you know.
It had just been moving and moving.
Hillary had a number one with Thy Will and Christian. And that, for somebody, they don't take two people coming from outside of that format. And so to have a number one in that format, it was unbelievable. So congratulations.
Thank you. It far exceeded there was just no way that I could have fathomed that would be.
And I know you all had projects going on, but when you get back together, it's got to be really special. Oh. Are you looking forward to going back on the road for a huge tour after this?
Man. Yes. Always. I mean, this has been a little bit more of a pared down year, but it's still been really busy. Of course, we've been just really wanting to concentrate on the record, and you know, it just seems like, you know, everybody from our team that has gotten their hands on this music is feeling the excitement and feeling that something special is going on. And I think with us, we've just learned to try to keep our expectations in check now. And just and one thing I've learned is to try to just focus on the art and what you can control, and not get too caught up in what there's benchmarks of success on the record, because I think, you know, sometimes that can be a little, you know, soul stealing when you start kind of trying to compare it with, like, you know, the success of the first couple records or whatever that may be. And so for us, you know, I mean, I just want people to consume it and get in there and really listen to it, you know. And I think
as a cohesive record,
you know. And I know people may cherry pick it too, and that's fine. I just think I still believe in the whole putting a record in from start to finish and giving it a listen. Amen. You know,
we love the album so much. I mean, even to your earlier question too. I mean, that I hope it stays around as long as it can. That's such an important part of music to me, is having that experience. I mean, as the artist especially, it's kind of you're hunkering down for half a year, mm-hmm. working, writing. You're in that creative space. Ideas are happening every day. You're in the studio working on arrangements and, you know, putting out a body of work with 10, 15 songs, whatever it is so important to us. So, I hope we're not just holding on to something that's obsolete in five years, but it's so important for us to just be a part of a season where we're together, feeling grateful, being excited, and making that the record, you know.
Hillary?
I mean, I think that the album experience it's like a novel. Like you need to always read and you need to always listen to the art in its full form. And I mean, this is an example I'm sure everybody uses, but I mean, the Kacey Musgraves album is a perfect example, and it's just from start to finish, it takes you on a journey, and that's what I love about what we get to do. And you know, we record and we gravitate towards songs that are kind of more commercial and pop minded because we're fans of so many different artists and different genres. So I think, to Charles's point, like you can kind of cherry pick and stream what songs you want, but we want those who do dig in to that really, in my opinion, precious process of listening to an album from top to bottom. We want you to be able to feel it. And so even if that percentage keeps dwindling and dwindling, I think it's important to not lose it.
I think it will come. I hope, Jimmy, you think it'll come back?
Well, I think the exciting thing about where we are now with the DSPs is there's no rules. I remember when we were at DreamWorks, Toby Keith had a record out and we were in what you call a cycle. And right in the middle of that, of course, 9/11 happened. He wrote Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. We couldn't put it out because we're in the middle of an album cycle. So now we could just put it up on Spotify, Pandora, Amazon, Apple, everywhere. So the great thing is if you have an artist like Lady Antebellum, a body of work fits perfectly for them. But if they come up with a great song in 6 months, we can put it right out. And there's no rules, and that's what's exciting. It's getting back, in my opinion, where music started. There's no rules, and that's when there's no rules, that's always where art lives lives the best.
I remember being a kid and, you know, growing up on rock and roll and waiting for, you knew when a record is going to come out, you're waiting. Your anticipation is just huge. Yeah. There weren't the social media drops like now. Does that dilute any of that anticipation from fans, you think, or no?
I mean, I think it's kind of analogous to when we were growing up, you picked the needle up and you moved it to a different song. Now all you're doing is clicking. So it's kind of the same thing. And I don't think, like I said, I don't think there's any rules. And I think the one thing that's constant in life is change. And you have to just keep, you know, going with it. And you let, you know, we're in the artist acceptance business. I mean, the customer acceptance business. And art that doesn't sell is an obsession with a storage problem. So we try to make sure we're giving, you know, great music in the way that fans want to consume it.
And with so many great albums that these guys have put up, how does this one stack up as an executive?
I just texted him the other day. I said, this music is exceptionally phenomenal. I think it's real. They're putting themselves out there. It's a little vulnerable, but it's very special, and it's coming right from their hearts. And that's always the best place music can come from.
Can't wait for
Thank
it.
You.
And I know we got to wrap here in a few minutes. Y'all got a show tonight, et cetera. But I want to know what the three of you anticipate or you hope for the fans to get from this record.
Gosh, I think for me, one of the things that I enjoy the most about getting to do this is when you hear that the fans and the listeners are putting their own stories into these songs. That connection to me is the magic of what we get to do. The tour I'm excited about. It's always fun for me creatively to think about like the staging and in how we can make this show different, and we all kind of have our own roles and lanes where that's concerned, bringing this music to life. But for me, it would be it's a true, if we aren't in the middle of what these songs are talking about, we've been through it or are gonna go through it or have been through it recently. So I feel like it's a very present album for us. Mm-hmm. And I really want the fans to hear that.
It's just a great synopsis, you know. Dave?
Yeah, I mean, to what Hillary said first. Mm-hmm. I mean, in addition to that, I mean, I always love that when people can hear the nuances, the details, and kind of hear and feel the energy and heart and time we put into an album. I mean, you know, these, you don't just kind of pop in one day and write something, throw it down. I mean, for us, this is a 2-year process of writing, a 2-year process of collecting songs, signing with the label, walking through, weeding out songs. I mean, I don't think we said a number, but we had at least 65 songs we were pulling from for this album total that we had written, and some pitches that were special to us. And so when you're looking at that body of work, you dwindle it down, you work with Dan Huff. I mean, we've been over to his house doing vocals, and that takes hours and hours, and guitars take hours and hours. So I think for me, I love when people can feel that we still care so much about the art and so much about the music and put everything we have into it. So there's a lot of little things to follow on this record, lyrics that hit you hard, parts and arrangements, and I think sonically the feel that we have, you've heard on the first single, you know, from working with Dan Huff, has brought us back to focusing on the vocals and the harmonies and the blend and the sound. So I hope they can hear the love we have for what
the
we
nuances.
Do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Charles.
I mean, you know, I mean, like Dan was even talking to us about, you know, he said there's entertainers and there's artists, you know, and there's certain artists that like aren't even there for the tracking. And I mean, and that was like, it kind of blew our minds. And it's like, you have to be a part of the music. You have to be a part of the process and picking these songs because, you know, your face and your name is on there. And so I don't know, we've always been a band that has put the art before anything else. And, you know, we love the live show. We love the whole different parts of the business. But at the end of the day, sitting in a studio making music is like the most exciting part of it. I mean, you know, if I was a painter, that would be me painting or whatever it might be. And so, I hope the fans can realize how much time we put into this. Mm-hmm. And I just hope they enjoy it. I mean, at the end of the day, if it doesn't sound good to them, then, you know, that would be a big blow. I mean, but to us, I mean, this, we feel like we've created something special here.
I've interviewed a lot of people. I could just tell how sincere you guys are. And I love that. I thank you as a fan for that. Jimbo, do you keep these guys informed about the charts? Are you still chart watching?
Every day.
He can't help himself. Yeah.
I try not to look as much in the morning so I can at least get my day up and running.
Wait, still at least 11 a.m. Yeah.
Like I'll get up, I'll wake up, you know, 6 o'clock. I'm not going to look. I'm going to go out, I'm going to exercise, I'm going to have breakfast, say hello to my family, and then I'm going to look.
What's one favorite song y'all are listening to right now out of the genre or in the genre that really loving?
Oh, man.
Or an album or a song, anything.
And I don't know. I'm such a big fan of him. He's a good buddy. But Brett Young, the new Brett Young single Catch, I love. And we wrote Here Tonight together. And I just think his record top to bottom is pretty special.
And you wrote Here Tonight, which is a great, phenomenal song. Yeah,
thank you, man. And we were talking about like Tennille Towns. That's a super cool record. Mm-hmm.
I love her.
Yeah. It's cool.
I'm playing the Ed Sheeran collaborations album pretty top to bottom, like when I'm driving in the car. And I love the song with Khalid, Beautiful People.
Oh, cool. Yeah. How about you, Dave?
I love, in country, I've been listening to Rachel Wamack's album. I love that album, her EP and stuff. Outside the genre, I just found this new band called The Band Camino. And I just discovered them and kind of digging in and loving a lot of their stuff. I think they're in Nashville, so might go see them in a few weeks.
You produced Whitney Duncan's group, right?
I did, yeah.
I love that record.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Post Monroe.
It's really good.
Thank you. You know, I love producing. I love working. I mean, that's, you know, whatever we're doing in 20 years, if it slows down, I mean, that'll be the first thing I sign up for is spending my months in the studio. That's my happy spot. So thank you.
Jimbo, something you've heard lately that you love?
I'm listening to the new REO Speedwagon record that came out in 1981.
Yeah. You can tune a piano.
Yeah, you can't tune a fish.
All right. What a great way to close. Jim Asker, the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast with Charles Kelly, Hillary Scott, Dave Haywood. Goodbye, guys.
Goodbye.
And thank you so much,
Jim.
Jimmy. Thank you for doing this. CEO, President, BMLG Records. Good. It's rough out there, so be safe on the road, will you?
Thank you.
It's a rough world out there right now.
Thank you.
Take
so
care.
Much.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.